Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 24th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Go ahead. You sound like you got something to say.
No, I don't. I was just going to say greetings from Ohio, and I just want to congratulate my Ohio State Buckeyes for completely dominating Tulsa in the last 3 minutes of last week's game.
Oh, man. I tell you, you just never know anymore. It's like almost college football is almost like the NFL or on any given Saturday, you know?
And, yeah. And then I thought my entire football season was doomed, and I was already looking up when pitchers and catchers report. because I don't know if you saw this, but there was a guy who, pardon the pun, but parlayed a $25 free parlay card. and he was 15 of 16 going into the Monday night game. He had called every other game correctly.
Wow.
Right? And if the Lions won, he was going to win $730,000 or something like that.
Wow.
And when I saw that article, and I'm like, there is no way this guy's going to lose. That is just too good of a story.
Yeah.
And then the Packers game started. I'm like, yep, this guy's going to be rich, and I'm going to be 0-2. So that's great. But the Packers ended up playing pretty well most of the game. And it turns out that guy actually did a save on his ticket. I didn't know you could do this. But technically, you can't. They usually don't offer a save on a promotional ticket. But right. They ran their odds and said, hey, if you want to take $130,000 and not risk Lions winning tonight, we'll give it to you today. And he did it. So,
holy cow, that's huge. I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, he got rich and I got 1-1. So we're all happy.
Win-win.
Awesome. Now I just get you past Mighty Akron on Saturday night.
So oh, my. Yeah, if you lose that game, oh, man. Not a chance.
Yeah, they're already talking about trying to get as many quarterbacks reps as possible. I'm like, how about you get as many points as possible? Let's start with that.
Exactly.
Let's do that first, and then we can worry about the other stuff later.
Oh, man.
But, you know, hey, we're privileged Ohio State fans. Everybody's whining about only 76,000 fans this week.
Yeah.
Like, only 76,000 fans.
First world problems.
Now, granted, that was the smallest crowd since I've been alive.
Wow.
Which is amazing. 1971, before they had a crowd that small in Ohio Stadium. So
wow.
There is something to it, but still, right?
Yeah, right.
Pretty sure UConn did not pack 76,000.
Does UConn even have a football program? I don't even know anymore. Like,
they are barely holding on to
barely,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
Intramural football, I think, is what's all the rage in Connecticut.
Powder puff.
Powder puff. Hey, I was a powder puff cheerleader.
Yeah, I was a Powder Puff fan.
No, you could have stopped at fan. You were a Powder Puff. All right, let's get into some poker. Jeez.
I got cut from the Powder Puff team. That's how bad I suck.
You were the water boy.
Oh, man. All right. The World Series of Poker has added 11 online bracelet events to the series, which kicks off in just 1 week here. The online events with buy-ins of $400 to $5,300 will be available to players physically in Nevada or New Jersey, and one of the events also will be available to players physically in Pennsylvania. The additions bring the number of bracelets expected to be doled out this year to 99.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
So someone saying 99 bracelets of gold on the wall?
No, I thought you were going to say I got 99 bracelets, but you're not one of them or something. I don't know. I don't know where you're going with that.
That would have been a good one, too. That's actually a more modern one. Yeah, sorry.
And one of these days, we're going to actually have a discussion about the watered-down product of the World Series, but it keeps getting pushed off.
Yeah. This week was a perfect segue for that, but we had other news that's more important. Yeah. We'll bring it up again whenever we get that item on the show. But, all right. So here's the thing. This has been probably the hardest World Series of Poker for the organizers to plan ever, right? Like, last year, they just didn't do it. I mean, why they did that little online thing and hybrid, whatever, let's just not call that a real thing. So this year, they're trying to do a real thing and try to make it as successful as possible, trying to accommodate everyone, which is impossible in the year 2021, right? So, I'm going to be a little less critical of them for doing that. So, I mean, if you are somebody upset that you can't go to the Rio and play because you're not vaccinated, well, now they just threw you 11 bones. So you can still go to Nevada. You can go to New Jersey for this one event, which I still don't understand why it's just one. But you can go to Pennsylvania and still be a part of the World Series this year if you are not going to be boycotty.
So,
that's a good thing, I guess, right? Now we're up to 99. I'm like, we talked about this before. I mean, at what point does Scott Long and Chris Cassenza get a World Series bracelet?
Yeah. It's like, they posthumously they'll give things away, or the Veterans Committee will put you in the hall. And, we've been around poker long enough now, I think they should just give us one honorary bracelets.
I mean, pretty soon they're going to have a $100 buy-in, 47-game mix, and that's going to be where I get my bracelet.
That's our jam right there.
Half online, half in person.
Oh, man. It is remarkable how many bracelets are available now. But I still don't understand. I can't wrap my head around the fact that, like, you have to be in these states to play in these bracelet events. And I understand it's like, well, Chris, think about it. You have to be in Nevada to play in the actual World Series. You have to be in that building if you want to play in that series. And I guess that's right. But we're all agreeing that that's where we have to go. Whereas you can just wake up if you live in New Jersey and roll out of bed and play for an event. It just seems weird that those are bracelet events when they're online. It just seems odd.
Or wake up in New York, get in your car, and drive across the bridge and park in the Whole Foods parking lot.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so weird. That's exactly right, though.
Still can't believe that guy won the bracelet. That's amazing. But again, I don't want us to sound any more like the two guys in the balcony of the Muppets any more than we always do. So, I mean, times, they are changing, right? Survivor's a complete mess last night, and watching that last night, you gave up on it, right?
So. No, I didn't give up on it. I just waited to watch it today because we had some other stuff to watch. We're taking our fifth time through the Game of Thrones, so we...
Fifth time through!
It is the fifth time we're watching the whole freaking series, but it's because there's nothing good on TV anymore, so we're just like, let's just watch that. But, no, don't spoil it for me. I'm going to find out today exactly what's going on.
Well, and I won't spoil it for you, but I might make a post today, so stay clear of my Facebook page.
Oh,
but I did. I went to bed angry at one of the twists, and I woke up this morning thinking that I overreacted, which is always a good thing that, at my age, I overreacted everything. So take a night to think of it up. But there are some poker analogies. So, maybe after you watch, if you want to, we can work this into the next week's show. And
all right.
And see how a thin lobster bisque-ish without a lobster in it, my analogy to poker and Survivor this year.
I was going to compare you to Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino, and then I said, I can't compare Scott Long to Clint Eastwood. Maybe in Cry Mango, because I heard he's pretty pathetic in that, but definitely not Gran Torino.
See, all kinds of stuff new to watch, and you're watching Game of Thrones.
I know.
Tell me you're going to skip the last season, because
I'm thinking about it. I know.
I mean, I'll get my own dragon to... Flipper Entertainment, the new owner of PokerStars, has reached an agreement with the Commonwealth of Kentucky, paying the state an additional $200 million on top of the $100 million already paid to settle a case where the online poker site was found in violation of the state's gaming laws. With interest, the amount owned by the state had increased to $1.6 billion. And Flutter had been dealt several legal losses in trying to get the decision reversed.
This story is just remarkable to me. I just can't get over the amount of money that had been used to settle this case, or that the case even happened in the first place. Just insane.
Yeah. You know, go back to the analogy of the parlay guy, right? Now, granted, that was 730 or whatever to 130. This is 1.6 billion to 300 million. But pretty much the same idea, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, I need to save. You know, I'm not going to get out of this. I've been trying hard. I'm not going to get out of it. What's it going to take for this to go away? 300 million. Okay, here you go. Rip it off. Thank you.
And I'm always astounded, too, when I see settlements like this and stuff, that these companies have this kind of money just in a fund somewhere that they haven't paid to themselves as owners or whatever, that they're using for operations. And
well, sometimes this is insurance claims, too. So I don't know if that's the case here. Probably not the case here with the line of business they're in. But right. But often when this stuff happens, it's just an insurance claim. So now that doesn't mean that it doesn't cost them anything, because now their rates are going to go up, or it gets harder for them to get insurance when the lapses. So there is a peril to it. But yeah, it's not like they have a vault in the Montgomery Burns office that they have to.
No, but I mean, it's still, even that, like if you pass it down the line, then you're like, how do these insurance companies stay afloat when they have to pay out billion-dollar settlements? You know, it's like, okay, I understand they make a lot of money with, you know, but still, you know, sometimes when you think about it, I mean, over the last 20 years or so, I mean, my wife totaled like a couple of cars, or three cars, and I thought, wow, you know, they're never going to get that money back from me, no matter how many years I pay that insurance. You know, pay $1,200 a year for 40 years, you know, that's still not going to get them $40,000. They paid for three of my cars. You know what I mean?
It's crazy. No, it's a good point, because I would say I've had one wreck in my entire life, and I thought the same thing at that time, and that was when I was 20-something, and I'm like, when I saw the total that they had to pay out, like, all right, I'm winning the insurance game for the rest of my life. Now, I don't know if I did it or not, but that's one accident 25 years ago, right?
Yeah.
You know other people have more, like your crazy wife that just hits everything, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. She thinks it's bumper cars.
but seriously, though, I'm like, you know, I've always wondered that, too. But obviously there is a strong bottom line to the insurance market. But as we've seen, as the world gets crazier and crazier, and hurricanes hitting left and right and earthquakes and stuff like that, that those companies are not as solvent as we think they are, that stuff can add up. So,
yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But right now, it looks like things are fine. And can we also talk about Commonwealth? I hate this.
I know. I
mean, it's a traditional thing. Sorry if you live in Kentucky or Virginia or any of the other Commonwealths, but it's a state. It's a state, right?
Yeah, your state.
It's called a state.
Yep. I mean, and it's always, too, when you watch the news, they're always saying the great state of, what are you saying? Other states aren't great? You know, just say, and don't even say the state of, just say Kentucky.
Well, and here's the thing. If you're going to call yourself the Commonwealth, you just got $300 million.
Yeah.
You better spread that wealth commonly to everyone in Kentucky, or you can't call yourself Commonwealth anymore. That's just
a, yeah, I'm watching Game of Thrones right now. The commoners would love some of that money. Right? Jeez. All right, let's move on.
All right. As alluded to last week, British casino owner Rob Young is pledging $1.2 million to fund a poker lobbying group for the next 5 years. Young, who said he doesn't necessarily need to be part of the group or a leader of it, said developments in the poker world over the past few years have led him to make the pledge. He hopes a worldwide group will lobby regulators and operators, but also promote the game of poker.
Well, you answered my question there, right, that last sentence, the worldwide group. So that means some of that money could get funneled into American politics?
Maybe, but if the Poker News article, which is the one I saw, there might be another interviews that he's done, and he's a tweeter, so you know, go read his tweets and get the sense of it. Obviously, I mean, he's British, so I mean, he's not 100% caring about us damn Yankees here, right? So, And really, if you kind of look at a lot of the things they listed, a lot of them are European. As much as we are really upset here in the state that there's, you know, only a handful of states here where we can play online poker, the regulation of stuff overseas is fairly ridiculous as well, too. I mean, obviously, there's lots of countries where you can play, but then there's lots of countries that are really cracking down. Or shutting these operators out of their borders, or making it harder for their players to play. So it is—it's almost as bad, if not worse, in other nations. So I can see why he's taking a global view to this. Now, of course, when you take a global view to it, $1.2 million is, you know, like the coins that we find in our couch, trying to go to Taco Bell for the fourth meal. So I don't know really how far that's going to go. But again, that's seed money, right? So
that's what I'm hoping for. That's like the first domino in many.
Yeah, I think I could be wrong. Maybe I'm making this up, but I thought I read this that, you know, obviously hoping to get, you know, a lot of volunteers to board together that will be focused on not only achieving his goals for it, but also obviously making it sustainable after 5 years, which would mean raising funds and getting other investors to make it happen. So, you know, again, if you get a bunch of people together and let's be honest, there's a ton of money in gambling worldwide, right? So it is possible to get enough of this together. My concern, though, is it's like he said he wanted to lobby both regulators and operators. So in a sense, that's essentially saying, hey, we want operators to be better, right? So we want to tell them to be better. At the same time, he's hoping that operators, and he says operators have talked to him about getting involved in the group. So if they get involved, can you also lobby them, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I think where a lot of this money came in the previous things was from the operators and letting them fund it so you can lobby the government. If you do that, though, I mean, one thing is you solve one problem, but then you create another problem, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess you just got to decide which is the most important element to go at. So wish them luck. Absolutely do.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
All right, Sir Clive Sinclair, a British inventor responsible for the pocket calculator and a gaming computer that rivaled the Commodore 64, has died. The multimillionaire also appeared in the first three seasons of the first whole cam poker show, Late Night Poker, in his native Britain. And I got to say, until this article, I don't remember Clive Sinclair, no offense to our listeners in the UK. But it's been a while since I've heard that the Late Night Poker and Jesse May, and I was very happy to read that. Although obviously it's sad to read. So, just hilarious. I loved him.
Yeah, no. And I think we brought this up earlier because we were talking about the first whole cam. I think, our good friend Joe, on, Antiup Fans on Facebook, he had brought up, you know, some trivia and stuff to have fun with, just to get people talking and stuff. And that was one of the first things he had put on his little trivia thing was, you know, which show had the first whole cam. And I remembered that it was Late Night Poker from like way back, even before 2000s or whatever. So interesting too. I you know, it's so weird, the pocket calculator. I mean, you think about how long ago that was, you know, and the Commodore 64 rival. So that means, you know, when we were just kids, you know, late 70s, early 80s, just crazy how he's a multi-millionaire from that too, you know, crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely a little blast from the past because, you know, I'm up here in Ohio and the next two nights I'm going to stay with my my best friend growing up. And he had a Commodore 64. I had a Commodore VIC-20.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the VIC-20.
So you know whose house we hung out at most.
That's right. And then they had the 128, I think, after the 64 for a little while. And then after that, I lost track of what Commodore did.
Yeah, the 64 was way better than the VIC-20. The VIC-20 I was playing draw poker on, and you put the little tape in the cassette player, let it load.
Yeah.
And then I go over to Eric's house, and then he has the 64. We're playing Goonies with all these great graphics and stuff. And I'm like, this is not fair.
Did I ever tell the story of the Commodore 64 on the show? I can't remember, with my mom. So you remember the service merchandise stores back in the day?
Absolutely. Right? We had a buyer thing, and you had to wait for it to come down the conveyor belt.
Come down the conveyor belt, exactly. So my mom promised to get me the Commodore 64, and it was like a present, but she just hadn't gotten it yet. It was like for a birthday or something. And so we go to the service merchandise, and we're waiting for it. And I don't know if you remember this, but the Commodore 64 was like $100, but the hard drive was like $300.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sitting there, and my mom pays for the Commodore 64, and then we're waiting for it to come down the conveyor belt, and here comes the hard drive and not the 64. And being the child that I am, I'm so stupid, I'm saying to my mom, that's not the 64, that's not the 64, that's the hard drive. And my mom's like, shut up. And I'm like, no, it's not the 64.
Nice.
That's right. So here I am. I've got my mom willing to steal this thing for $200 less than it costs or whatever. And I'm the one thinking, no, I need my 64 so I can type in coding and play these awesome graphics, but not realizing I need the hard drive to be able to play those games. And I'm gonna, and she would have bought me the 64 after that, but I opened my big mouth and I had to lose out on getting the hard drive for another like 6 months or a year or something, wait a Christmas to get the hard drive. So, but yeah, that conveyor belt, it's all these blasts from the past. Some people don't even have no idea what we're talking about, but...
Yeah, a couple things I was thinking of while you're telling that story. One, if you were younger than 46, you were just amazed. What conveyor belt are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
You buy stuff and drops it off on your front porch. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
And then secondly, our fans are like, whoa, this is the Chris Cosenza crime family here. Jimmy bashing cars, mom stealing hard drives.
My last name's Cosenza. What do you think happens?
Nobody wants to know what dad is doing.
You don't want to know. You don't want to know.
Oh, man. The good old conveyor belt, man. I miss the service.
Yeah. Oh, a blast from the past.
Here's this week's update on poker room reopenings. In Pennsylvania, Wind Creek, Bethlehem will reopen a temporary poker room October 1st. And in Las Vegas, the Flamingo and Bally's will close their poker rooms temporarily from September 26th to November 26th. Ostensibly to help staff the World Series of Poker. That gets us now to 270 reopened poker rooms, not counting the two that will close for 2 months.
Right.
We go to antiupmagazine.com/reopen for all those details. So a couple things before we move on to this. One, the Wind Creek will be a temporary room. They have pledged that they're going to build a new permanent room next year. So that's an encouraging development that they're not just going to wait for the new room. Well, one, they're building a new room, which is encouraging. And two, they're not going to just wait until that gets done. They're going to get you back in the poker game if you were in that part of Pennsylvania.
Right.
It's good. And then, yeah, so Flamingo and Bally's, this has been a long rumor for a week or two at least now that they were going to close these rooms. And they didn't say the staff of World Series Poker, but it's got to be that, right? I mean, those dates just coincide.
Yeah. Oh, quickly. Yeah.
And it makes sense, too. I'm like, you know, hey, you know, again, you're trying everything you can to get enough dealers, and you operate three open poker rooms in the city that have dealers. There we go. I mean, where are we going to find the dealers? Where will we find the dealers? So,
yeah, I'm sure they're hoping to find the dealers, though, while having to close down the rooms that make them a decent amount of money in the strip. But
yeah. Not the perfect scenario. I mean, they've never, as far as I know, they've never done this before to be able to staff, but it's a different world now. So at least they have that option, you know. I mean, other rooms or other series don't have that option. So, and as of now, they're leaving the Caesars Palace room open, which is the biggest of the three.
Yeah, well, this tells you, too, that they – which makes more money, the World Series or poker rooms? Well, I think we know the World Series makes more money because they're not going to shut down two poker rooms to help fund something that doesn't make money. Tournaments make money when you do it at this grand level or scheme or whatever. So,
well, and there's cash games over there as
well. Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, really, all you're losing here. I mean, I no offense to the Flamingo or Bally's rooms, but I mean, they're mostly tourist places to get the dad who's after mom's gone to bed to come down and play a little poker 1-2 and, you know, lose $500. So you know, it's not like a huge loss. It's a loss of convenience if you're a tourist that, you know, you want to go downstairs and play poker, and now you're gonna have to go across the street. But yeah. But it's literally across the street from both of these rooms in Caesars. So. You know,
yep.
And still plenty of other poker rooms. So in the grand scheme of things, it's a very creative solution that has very limited downsides, in my opinion.
Right. Definitely calculated. They looked at the numbers and crunched them and said, yeah, it's definitely worth it to do this. So, okay. Any updates? Pape's, the Antiup fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games run to 6, 16, and 26 every month and rotate disciplines of the main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans Group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a Hand of the Week, Listener Spotlight, or Call to Floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans Group on Facebook. So we have a new O'Malley's move today. Just have a quick note, too. O'Malley says the river when he means the flop in this first part. So
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute, did I miss something?
don't throw anything off there or whatever. I mean, it's clearly the flop. So, but always good when we have a new one.
It's tough, though, because we never make a mistake like that. So,
no, I know. And it's funny, too, because I was trying to help you out this week. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do the O'Malley's move for him. I'll write it up for the... And then you were writing it up while at the same time I was writing it up. But I'm trying to send you a note through the file. I'm like, Scott, I'm trying to do this for you. And you weren't reading it. So I'm like, all right, he's already doing it. So I just stopped. But anyway, always love when we have a brand new O'Malley's move. Brand new is redundant. So here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em home game. This game is ridiculously deep stacked as the buy-in ranges from 100 to 1,000. Most players buy in for the max, but the action is usually relatively loose pre-flop and then can get pretty jumpy after the flop. The game is six-handed. The blinds post, the under the gun calls, and we're in the MP with 850 down 150 and the 10 of spades, 10 of clubs. This is a great starting hand six-handed. The table standard raise is 4x, but we account for the limper. We make it $10 to go. The cutoff calls. This player is a speculative one pre-flop, but plays aggressive most of the time after the flop. He bought in for 1,000 and currently sits with 1150. He's up 150. The small blind folds, the big blind calls, and the under the gun calls. There's roughly $40 in the pot, and the river is a fairly safe 9 of hearts, 9 of diamonds, 5 of spades. It's check to us. A check might be the best move here. There's no draws, really, and if we're up against the 9, we're pretty much dead in the water. I, however, decided to bet. I made it $30 to go, leaving me around 800 left. All players call. What is going on here? With 160 in the pot, the turn is the tray of clubs. The two players before me once again check. I like a check for pot control here. The cutoff leads out for 100, leaving him around 1,000 behind. The big blind and under the gun both fold. This feels like an in-position player trying to steal the pot. Maybe he has us on ace-king or something. We make the call. With $360 in the pot, the river is the 4 of spades. I like more pot control. We check. Our opponent thinks briefly before betting $300. What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you want something from us in the past year, get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, world's number one poker training site. And last week we mentioned that we have two hands from a longtime listener, Michael Paul. This is the second one. And so to remind you, he is in a two, I believe it's a 2-3 no limit casino cash game. Buy-in is 100 to 400. Max drop is $7 a hand, if that means anything to you. And so this hand is from that same game. He says he's bought in for another 300 and have been fairly card dead for the past 2 hours since the last hand. But you managed to win a couple small pots and build up to 450. Watch, the table's different than before. You don't have any history with any of these players either. The eventual villain starts the hand with about 550, so obviously S is covered by 100, and we are in the small blind.
Okay.
Middle position player raises to 15. The eventual villain, who is in the hijack, calls. Button folds. And so there's three callers to us already, and again, we're in the small blind with the king of clubs, queen of clubs.
Okay, I'm just going to call. It's one thing to say, okay, well, this could be a hand where you're going to raise and, you know, maybe take it or something. But you're in the small blind. Now, you have a nice little suited king, queen, a little marriage, but these are also trap hands. If somebody in middle position's raising, they could easily have something like ace, king, or ace, queen. You don't always have to be an under the gun to have that hand. So it's a trap hand. You want to be careful with it. And I don't feel like raising because I have two other people in this hand, and we're going to be out of position to both of them no matter what happens if they want to call. If you have a raiser and a caller, you could try to squeeze one of them out, but for the most part, you know you're probably going to get at least one more caller or re-raise and just wasting money because you can't you can't fight back with a king queen in a small blind when someone makes it four bets. So to me, I'm just going to call and tread lightly. You know, maybe a little trickery here and there if I can, but for the most part, king queen is a good hand, but it's not a great hand, and your position's the worst possible. So I'm just going to be careful with this hand. We always talk about this on the show too, when you want to make sure you hit the flop hard when you're going to play a hand out of position. You know, you want to make sure you really do get that dream flop or close to it to play it pretty significantly later on. So I'm going to be careful. I'm going to call, though.
Yeah, again, this is a cash game, not a tournament, so no shame in folding here. You're in the worst position. You've got a trap hand, as my partner mentioned. So if you want to fold here, again, absolutely no shame. Raising here, I would only advocate raising here if you know your players. He's already mentioned he has nothing on any of these players. So
yeah.
By raising, now you're putting yourself in a really bad spot because you're in the worst position with a vulnerable hand. And you have no basis of knowledge to really outplay your opponents, other than general poker theory. So that's not a situation I want to get into a cash game. So folding is fine. Raising, I think, is very problematic here. The call is interesting now because it kind of depends on the flow of the game here. Again, as you mentioned, and I always mentioned, you got to follow through on what you want here. I don't want to hit a king or queen with this hand. I want to hit a straight or flush draw. Or hopefully straight or flush.
Yeah.
As well as those miracle hands like full houses and quads and stuff, right? But that's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a king. I'm not looking for a queen. I'm not even terribly excited about a king-queen either, though I'm not going to necessarily fold for that. So, but that's what I'm looking for. I'm going to call. You know, there is obviously some metagame strategy in cash games where if you always fold your small blinds, people know that and you get picked on. So every once in a while you have to pick one to get involved so they know you're not going to fold. And this is an interesting one to do that. So I think I'm going to call here, but I'm going to be very careful on what I'm looking for. So.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Our hero says we just call because we don't really want to play out of position to a raise, and we'd have to raise to $70 or more since there's already $45 out there. We call, and one other person calls as well, too. I'm assuming that's the villain in the hand. I'm sorry. One other person calls. I must be the big blind. Okay. So we're five-handed now. Pot is $75 after the drop, and the flop comes out, and our hero says it's a glorious queen of hearts, queen of spades, six of clubs. Again, it's five-handed, and we are first to act.
Okay, so one thing I want to make sure I got clear. So we're the small blind, and when you said middle position raised, you said there was one caller before it got to us. So that'd be four-handed then, right? Is small blind, big blind called?
I'm going to guess the big blind came along. He didn't say that, but since there's five, that's the only other player to act after us.
Right, so it'd be small blind, big blind, but then middle position and one caller is four people.
Exactly. So. Yep. Three callers are...
Not that it matters, because you know they're all going to fold.
There must be another person involved here, because he said there are three callers before it got to us, even though he only mentioned the raiser.
Okay,
and one.
So there must have been two callers after the raiser, because he's in middle position. Okay. Well, I'm clearly checking. I mean, it's one thing if you have an aggressive game, and you know somebody's, they're like really proud, and they're like, hey, you know what, you want to bet into me, I'm going to raise you, blah, and then you might bet out. If it's one of those super system old school things where, it's just you and the under the gun raiser and he's supposed to have a hand there, so you bet into him when you flop something big, make him think, well, I've got aces, I'm going to come over the top kind of stuff. But in this case, with all of these people, I love a check because you feel like someone's going to try to represent that queen or someone's going to think there's no queen out and they're going to bet. Now, it could be everyone's going to be scared of the two queens and it's going to check around, but I don't think you lose a street of value. I think... you wake up in the small blind and bet on the turn then, and then someone's going to think you're trying to steal it and you're going to get some money out of them. So I like a check here and see what happens.
Well, the problem with betting here is that then people wonder what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, they're not going to put you on a queen necessarily. I mean, I wouldn't even come out betting here, particularly since there's no flush draws or straight draws possible to come. So it's pretty well protected. So in that sense, since it's against type, that might be a play. So the problem with checking, I think, is, and I think that's probably what we're going to end up doing and what most people would do anyhow, is if it does check around, like you mentioned, Then we got a bet out on the turn, and then that screams that we have a queen, right?
Or that we're stealing it.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I mean, that's a really powerful play. Take yourself out of this hand, and you're in the small blind with something else, and let's say it's 10-10-6, and it checks around, and you've got nothing. You've got jack four or something, right? Mm-hmm. Now you need to bet that turn, because now people are going to think you have that 10, right? And they're all going to fold, and you're going to take it down. So that it works to our detriment here, because we actually have the queen now, and we want some value for it, right? So that's what we got to try to figure out here. There was a pre-flop raiser, again, we don't have any history on it. I wish we knew. I mean, if we knew he was a solid 100% c-bet no matter what, that'd be great, I think. I am a little worried about checking around here, but four players in the hand, I got to think somebody's going to take a stab at this. And again, if we bet now, it's going to look really weird. So
the other thing, too, I'll say about the turn is that the turn doesn't necessarily have to mean you have a queen. It could be like a nine comes and you've hit your nine with, you had 8-9 or 10-9 or 10 comes. So there's a chance that you could represent what comes in a turn if it's under the queen. And then the person who has kings now says, who raised preflop, hey, you know what? You hit that. I'm better than that. I don't think you have the queen. So there are a lot. If people just bet the way we thought they were going to bet, we would never lose. So I would think in this case that there are two reasons why you could bet the turn and not have the queen. So you're stealing it or you hit the turn. So in this case, I don't mind the check. And then if we lose a street of value, I really don't think you do. I think when you bet the turn, someone might think you're stealing it or you might hit an undercard. So, if an ace or something comes, that's also golden too, because then the guy who, raised preflop might have ace king and now he's hit his ace or his king and didn't think you had a queen. Now he bets it and you can call. And so there are all these scenarios that can still play out by checking. So I think we can check.
If he has aces, then it's not gold.
Yeah, then it's not gold. Exactly.
The other thing I like about I generally like checking out a small blind anyhow, because there's so much in the hand to develop, right? We've got four other players. Part of us thinks it could check around. Part of us think it might be a preflop raiser bending and everybody else getting out of the way. Who knows? But we don't know, right? So by checking here, let's let everybody else kind of play this hand out, and then we can make a decision at that point. It could get really interesting. It could be the initial raiser bets, and then somebody else raises him before it gets to us.
Right.
And then, now that not necessarily a great thing, because it could be ace queen or something else that has us beat, but that would be an interesting development. So let's just kind of see how this plays out.
Okay.
All right. Here says we check hope that the original raiser or somebody else takes a stab at the pot. Unfortunately, it checks around. Dope.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is kind of what I was talking about. So now our scenario is, do we bet out? And actually, to kind of counteract that thing I mentioned before, is I think maybe we take another check here, because no one has a queen. Depending on what the turn is, you're not going to get action from him anyhow, right? So you might as well check and hope. They can catch up smaller if that's the case. So
yeah, it's funny. We were talking about betting the turn because we had to, and now all of a sudden it's like, no, let's check again and hope somebody doesn't believe we have the queen. And who's another street of value? It's like it's rocking a hard place.
Yeah. All right, the turn is the tray of clubs. So our board now is the queen of hearts, queen of spades, six of clubs, tray of clubs. So flush draw and some weak straight draws now on board. And we are first act.
We have the clubs, so it's not like we have to worry about being drawn out here. I mean, unless somebody has the ace of clubs, suited, it's a pretty good hand for us.
Yeah, much more than we normally.
So, I mean, I don't know. Again, you really need to know the players if you think that someone's going to think you're trying to steal it. You're hoping somebody had jack 10 of clubs so that they could come along, but I don't know. Maybe we do check and have that original raiser say, all right, maybe somebody doesn't have a queen, now it's safe to bet. But you're running the serious risk of a checking around again, because now everyone's worried.
So you do. But again, now that we have the club protection, there's fewer cards that are going to come that we're worried about. I'm like, it's really unlikely there's a four or five out there. So the straight doesn't really bother me. And again, if it's like an ace or a king, that's generally a good thing, unless, of course, we're up against aces or kings. But it's not going to check around if people have aces. If you have aces or kings, you're betting this turn, right?
Yeah.
So we'll know right away whether that's the case. So I don't think we're really giving up too much value. And now we're kind of hoping that something comes on the river that does help someone, you know, that ace or king for the ace king are out there. And if it happens to come clubs, you know, obviously there's one club that beats us, but, you know, you can't be scared of that. So, you know, I think I'm fine wrapping the table here again and hope somebody else decides to come alive.
All right, let's check.
All right. So now we have trips with a flush draw in addition to the full house draw. And of course, the flush could be dead to a flop boat or pocket trays. But if that happens, it happens. We check again. And it checks to the villain, who now wakes up and bets $50. Let's see. All right, so it's on us next.
Now I'll just call.
Yeah, now we got somebody putting money in, so what's this guy's now? So here's the thing. Okay, I kind of agree with you, but now what do we do on the river? Now the river, do you bet into him, or do you check hoping that he's going to take another stab? Because the $50 really probably is a probing bet here. It could be a probing bet. It could be something, right? So he could be just hoping that he takes down the pot because no one has anything.
I tend to bet the river because no matter what comes, it could look like you're representing the queen when you don't have it. And that thought could be in their head because they might think, did you really check two streets and not have that queen? When you wanted your value and protected against the clubs, they're not putting you on clubs. So I like to bet out on the river because if you check, yeah, he could bluff at it. He could have a worse queen than you and still bet, but basically I think that you're going to want to get your value and not run the risk of him checking behind. You've got three queens. You maybe end up getting a flush on the river. That's a scary thought too. If you make your flush now, not scary, but now it looks like, okay, now whoever this person is, they can be beat by multiple hands.
Now you scare him up. You may not want to improve here.
If you do improve, then you might check. But if it's a blank, then I think I'm betting out because it's like, okay, the only hand that's beating my pocket kings or whatever this guy might have is a queen, and why wouldn't he have bet the turn when it was wet there and he saw a check around when it got to him? So I don't think he has a queen. Boom, 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 he calls you. So I like betting out on the river, but I'm going to call here for now.
And you can make a pretty decent size value bet on the river, too, that if you get called, you're going to get value. Again, remember the situation we're in now. I mean, you know, obviously you want to get the most value you can out of trips, but in the small blind is very difficult, I think, than in other spots around the table. So you got to take what you can get, right? So not every time that you flop trips, you're going to be able to find a way to truly maximize value in the way that you want to, but still absolutely maximize value. So, yeah. I think I'm calling here and then putting out a decent size, a properly sized value bet on the river and see what happens.
So. Yeah, I mean, there is, we didn't really discuss this, but there is the option of raising and then hoping this person has a massive hand, like ace, ace, king, king, or even like a queen, like a queen jack, because, you know, you even have the flush as a backup if you're wrong. If somebody has, you know, like ace queen and they have you beat, you still have that flush as an option on the river that you could save you. So there is that thought process, but I don't see any reason to do that. You know, plus if you just call, you got chances of others calling too still for that.
Exactly. Yeah, right? You want to build some money there. You don't know what else is going to happen. I mean, maybe else somebody's going to check raise this guy too. So there's that consideration. Although I guess if that's the case and you raise, maybe they'll raise you. So, but then now I'm really worried if I'm raising and somebody raises me, because there are lots of hands I have us beat here.
Yeah.
And some of those, the flush isn't going to save us with. So the other thing too is if we raise here, assuming nobody else has anything and this guy was just trying to steal it, then he's gone right now, right? Whereas if you call and then you put out that mild value bet on the river, you know, he might decide to look you up. So you might pick up another $100 out of this guy versus check raising. So always a dilemma here, but I think I'm going to call here and put that value bet up.
Scary thought. I haven't had the scary thought till just now is that because this person wasn't the original raiser, if he had 6-6 and he was set mining and he's just slowly, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's scary too. He's hoping someone has a queen and he's got the boat. So there are some hands, like you said, when you said there are a lot of hands that beat us, I'm thinking, no, they're not. And I'm like, wait, yes, there are. So 6-6 is definitely one of those hands. So
6-6, straight tray.
Yeah.
A better queen.
Ace queen.
And then we don't know what comes. Any other card on the river could be a boat for someone too. So,
yeah.
So I mean, we may not be beat now, but there's a little bit more danger in that river than we're giving ourselves credit for. So we'll see what happens. All right. Now I lost my place in there.
Well, I'll fill the airtime. So a rabbi, a priest, and a... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was from earlier.
All right. Okay, our hero pauses for a moment just to make sure it's not an instant call, but long enough to really Hollywood, and then you call. Everybody else folds. Pot's now 175, and we have 385 left. The river is the gin card. It's the queen of diamonds, so our final
card is...
It's queen of spades, six of clubs, tray of clubs, queen of diamonds. Who needs no stinking flush? And we are first to act.
See, now, this is when you check.
Yeah, this is when we want that six, the sixes out there, right?
Yeah. Or we want the guy to have the aces or the kings, because he's never going to put you on the case queen. He's going to think, okay, I got queens full of aces. Even if he has a pair, I got him beat, no matter what it is. So this is when you check. And the guy's like, ha ha ha, your flush didn't matter. And he'll value bet, and then you raise him. So I, if you bet out here, he better have, no matter what. I mean, if you have, if you're beat as the other guy, and we bet out, he's going to think to himself, okay, if I have ace-ace, I still have to call here. If you check and he has ace-ace, he's going to bet out. So no, I think no matter what you do here, I mean, you could try betting out, but I think this guy is going to bet if you check, because he just doesn't put you on quads. And we did the whole Hollywood thing, which is interesting. We didn't really talk about that before, but I don't know. I feel like a check is definitely in order here, because like I said, if you check and he checks behind, I don't think that he was going to call a bet if you bet out. So why not check and let him either bluff at it or think his pocket aces or pocket kings are good? So I think you have to check no matter what now, believe it or not, which is weird. If it was a tournament, oh, no, you wouldn't be screwed because you're not last to act. Okay. All right. So, yeah, I would check.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I think checking. I'm trying to think of a scenario here where we bet out. I mean, again, no one ever puts you on quads, right? And there is some human psychology involved where if you bet out here, the guy looks at it and will say, quads, I can't be in call, just because he wants to see it for his own mental, you know, right? He's like, okay, you do have quads, all right, fine, here, take the money, right? So there is that argument, I guess. But the fact that he took that stab, and now it comes out, the danger is that if he doesn't have anything, I mean, now the board's super dangerous. And if I'm him, I'm just taking behind and hoping that whatever I have is better than my junk is better than your junk. Right. Versus if we bet out here, the problem is betting out here now, it's different than before, because now the board just got so much more dangerous. So he's going to have to assume you're bluffing here to call or have one of those big hands. And I don't think he does. So I think I got to check here and just hope that he's going to throw something in.
Yeah, I'm hoping what happens is this guy has something like 8-8 and he was set mining. And the way this all came down, checked on the flop, turn, everyone checks again. He's like, well, my 8s are better than the 6 and the 3. And if this guy's had a queen, they would have bet already. So I'm going to bet with my 8. And now the river is a queen, he's thinking, well, I've got the best full house knob, unless this guy has a queen. I don't think he has a queen, because why would he check quads to me? And then he bets, and then you raise. So I still like the check bet and hope he has, like, pocket eights.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. So, all right, here it says, I figure you check the flop and the turn, so you might as well check the river and see what the villain does. He doesn't disappoint and bets 155.
Nice. Yeah, so now you just min-raise. I mean, because if you shove, he's going to know you have the queen, but min-raise might make him think, all right, whatever, because you can't just call. So the minimum amount to raise, I think, to get him to try to call.
I just say if we min-raise at least a 75 behind, if that matters at all, which it might. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I think any bet you make here, unless he has aces or kings, then he's going to raise you again, right? So... Or if he has kings, maybe he's not
going to raise. I think no matter what you do, he's calling. He's not raising.
Yeah.
There's no way.
So, yeah. So at that point, I guess that's what I'm saying is, do we limit ourselves to the min raise, or do we just throw the extra 75 on top of that? and get it all in at that point, because either he has a hand that he's going to call us, or he's going to fold. He's going to fold a min race anyhow if he thinks we have the queen, or he has nothing, right? So, I think I'm just going to go all in here. I don't think I'm going to scare him away any for that extra $75. And if he does have a decent hand, then that's 75 more bucks I get from him, I think. But
if this guy shoves and then we call and it's a foul deck and there's five queens, I'm going to be really mad. Because I can't imagine this guy calling any bet we make atop of his 150 or whatever. So even if he had aces or kings.
Well, let's see. The pot was 385, so his 155 bet is like half the, a little less than half the pot. So, I mean, that is probably an aces or kings hand. Now, I don't know whether the rest of the action really supports that anymore. So, I don't know.
He wasn't the original raiser, though. So, I can't imagine this guy has aces or kings.
Yep, that's what I'm saying. So, it doesn't really support that. So,
all right. Well, I'm gonna min raise. You can shove.
It could be jacks or tens or something like that, though, which is probably going to call, because then he doesn't, same way, you know, we didn't play this any differently than he did, so he can't put us on aces or kings either, right? So if I'm sitting there with jacks or tens or even nines or eights, any of those hands, right, I still feel like I've got the best hand. So
no, I will be absolutely floored if we make any raise at all and the person calls.
Really?
I would be absolutely floored if we raise and this guy calls. There is no other hand we can have that we do that with. There's no other hand. We check raise.
What about that?
No way. There's no other hand that check raises there and plays it from a small blind.
To someone with jacks or tens, then we'll just
there's no other hand. Plus, if you have to replay this whole hand in your head and try to get jacks or tens through that whole hand the way it happened, or that we had something better than 6-3 or a pair bigger than sixes from the small blind and didn't wake up until now. If they don't think we have a queen at this point, I want this guy in my home game forever.
Really? I don't know. I mean, 75% that we have a queen here, but that 25% is pretty strong when I've just put 155 in, and now the pot's so big that I only have to put another 230 in. So I don't know.
Man, no.
I mean, because we would play the same way with jacks, tens, nines, or eights here, I think. We called the preflop raise. We checked. No one bet. We checked again because, you know, we still don't have the so queens out there. Some guy say stab bet for $50, and we pause. Call.
Exactly. We pause. Call. What hands in the small blind do? I don't think in the small blind, with that many callers, that you're coming along with jacks or tens and then not betting out on that turn to protect against your jacks or tens. And then on the river, you check again?
I don't know. I think there's lots of people that would like to check this down and hope their jacks or tens are good here. Now when I get into a raising war.
I don't disagree that we could have that, but on the river, when we raise again, we're raising against somebody who clearly would have the queen and would be strong enough to do that, considering where they were.
We're saying no one's going to give us credit for the queen, so we don't get. I mean, nobody gives anybody credit for quads. I'm sorry, they just don't. Not in the 2-3 game.
Oh,
so,
man. I don't know.
I think this could shape up as a battle of two pairs against each other. It's just a matter of who has the higher pair. So, I'm sorry. I don't think a lot of danger here in shoving for that extra 75. We already agree that we need a min raise, obviously, right? Because we do have the nuts, so we have to at least min raise. So that extra 75, I just don't think it changes anything. So if he's going to call the 155, he's going to call the 230.
I don't think I disagree with whether or not we should shove or not. There's just something mentally about knowing somebody went all in with three queens on the board and they've played it passively the whole way. And whereas if you min raise, maybe it looks like you're getting tricky, and this guy's like, oh, you think your six is good? I've got tens or eights, or I don't know. So maybe you're thinking that it looks like it's jacks versus tens in this situation or something, because those two hands probably wouldn't have re-raised pre-flop and then played it the way we said. But I just got a feeling the small blind, playing it the passively way we've played it the whole way, and Hollywooding, which is the worst thing you can do, a street before. I just think if this guy calls our raise, I'm going to be floored. I really am. So, all right, let's see what happens. I'm dying to know.
What do you, The question is just whether he'll call a 230 versus a 130.
Yeah, no, I know. I just can't believe it. I think he would. I think if he's going to call, he'd call it all. It's just there's something about going all in too mentally that makes someone think you might have a better hand than you do. But yeah, I don't disagree. I think if he's going to call 150, he's going to call 230. But it's the way you go all in. Maybe you just push it all in. I don't know. But even then, you're hollowing if you push it in weak. You know, you want it weak when you're strong. Blah blah blah. So I don't know how you do it.
I don't know how much Hollywooding can happen here that's actually going to affect. Maybe there's some. I don't know. But,
I don't know.
Anyway, our hero does say all in, so now I guess we'll see what happens here.
All right.
So the villain tanks for quite some time. He looks like he's going to call at least twice, but you aren't looking at him and you can't see all his movements. We stare at the board. Finally, he folds. But when he folds, you hear him say to his neighbor that he must have the queen. You then hear him say that he flopped a boat and had me right where he wanted me. Our hero says, obviously I won the hand, but I'm curious about a couple things. One is, could I have gotten more value if I lead out on the flop? Aren't I just announcing that I have a queen? Yeah, I can mention that. I'm horribly out of position. I limped in pre with five players. Seeing flop, isn't the assumption pretty much somebody has a queen? I think checking the flop was fine, and it was just unfortunate that nobody else made a stab. Checking a turn, I think, is the same thing. Sure, now somebody could decide to stab at the pot with nothing, just hoping everybody else thinks they have a queen, so maybe that's an option here. But I still checked and he bet $50, maybe a raise here. If he really flopped the boat, then clearly he would have called or shoved. And if he's putting me on a queen, but I could also have any pair, two pair, if I'm not putting him on a flopped or turned boat. This is the street I'm curious about. The river plate itself was like having to bet 155 into a pot of 175. I know I can't lose, so I'm certainly going to raise. He just folded, but I still managed to get an extra 155 from him. Is there any way to play it differently that gets more value from him if he doesn't have a flop boat? He folds to a raise on the turn, and that's the problem, is that we gave him credit for a possibility of a boat, right?
Right.
And obviously that had us dead. I mean, we were dead to this one card, right? Yep,
one outer.
So had we done anything else,
or a king, he could hit a king, but yeah.
Yes, yeah. We've been put to a test, got it all in, and been miserable. Knowing that we are down to that, I guess it's what, three outs now, right?
So or a three. No, so a queen, three threes, and three kings. So semi.
That's right.
But here's the thing. The way to get more, again, now this is that whole hindsight crab results oriented, but if you did decide to play the flop strongly because you had a razor and you're betting into the razor who's supposed to have aces or kings there, that's the way they kind of make it look, even though he's middle position. You know, if you're thinking that, then you get all the money. Because now you bet out, this guy raises you with his boat, you know, and then you shove on him and he calls with his boat, flop, six is full, which is what we talked about midway through this hand of the week. And then you get all the money because you river the queen. Online, you may not river the queen because it happened too fast and that card may not have come. But in the real world where cards are destined, you know, that's how you get the most money, is betting that flop, hoping this guy raises you. Because he's hoping you have a queen there, and then he raises your flop bet, you re-raise him all in, or whatever it is, and then he shoves, or whatever it is. That's how you get the most. Other than that, on the turn, you know, you could have bet out the turn, and then he might have raised you there, and you might have gotten it all in. But at that point, he's starting to worry a little bit, too, because he might think you have queen three or queen six or something, you know, because you were in the blind. So he may not automatically just shove on you or get all your money. But I think that the flop is where you could have gotten all the money. The river, there's no chance.
I
think
if I got the boat there, I mean, because that boat is super vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing flop for you, but it's super vulnerable because, again, you got five players in this hand. You got to think somebody else has a queen, which means if they have a queen, one, you're going to get their money, which is what you want anyhow, right? And then two, they got a lot of cards that could come to pair their kicker that's going to beat you. So, yeah, I don't see any way, had we bet out there, that money doesn't get all in on the flop. So, unless we fold to a big raise, right? So yeah, that's where you get your money in, I think. Maybe it's what happened on the turn. But
it's funny, that guy saved money by not betting the flop. And,
did.
You know, and you don't usually bet the flop when you flop the world like that. But, you know, had he bet the flop, he would have been like, oh, he would have lost all of his money, so, or whatever, he had it covered. But I don't think you get any more money out of this hand unless you bet that flop. And we talked at the time, you got to do what's best for the moment, not in hindsight. And so at the moment, you don't bet that flop unless you're positive the middle position player has a worse queen than you, which you can't possibly know, or that he's the type of player that if he has aces or kings, he's going to raise you there, and then all of a sudden the sixes wake up and shove on you, you get lucky. But we didn't really have too many reasons for betting that flop in the small blind, because people are usually afraid of paired boards, and if they don't have one of those cards, or if they don't have the unpaired card, generally they all fold. So there's no way for you to get more money unless you bet that flop, and we already said you wouldn't do that. So I think you got the max value for it, really.
Probably, absolutely. And I do want to give you credit here, because you did say everybody's going to assume that you have a queen when you raise, and that's exactly what this guy muttered. But I do think he's selling himself short there. I mean, and if he did say he had a boat there, now granted that boat is worthless now if we have any of the other hands I said that we could have had, which is jacks, tens, nines, right?
Yeah, so
it doesn't really matter, I guess, at that point. But to mutter that he had the queen, I could see myself muttering he caught up to me, or he flopped the boat and he improved. I don't know if I'm muttering he has the queen there, but that's what you said, and maybe I'm not thinking it correctly there. But
I don't know. I'm just as rusty as you. I mean, I can't remember the last hand of poker I played, where, you know, at all. So never mind properly. So, but yeah, to me, I just felt like there was no way that you could raise there and not have a queen. You could call because you could have 8-8, 9-9, 10-10, jack-jack, and both of these players could have those hands the way this hand played. You go back from the beginning and play it to the end with all of those pairs and all those guys' hands, and that's pretty much how this whole hand could have gone, exactly the same way for all those scenarios. So for me to raise, there's just no way to raise there for me, or to call a raise, I mean, when I'm the villain. So, but I'm glad he won the hand, because he lost last week.
Yeah.
Right? So he got some of that money back, and that was a pretty big pot. Even though the guy didn't call the river bet, raise or whatever, that's still a big pot for Mike, so that's good.
Oh, and there was one last paragraph, which is actually interesting with the discussion we just had here. So he did say, as far as I'm folding and proclaiming I must have a queen, that he folded a flop boat, I'm not entirely sure I believe him. He never showed. Putting anybody on quads, even when there's three on the board, is tough. It's literally one card that you're putting them on. I honestly think it's way more likely anybody just has a pocket pair in that spot. And if he's sitting with 6-6, he just got counterfeited in a major way to just about every other pair a player could have. If you're in a spot, do you fold? It's about 230 to call and win 715. So, yeah, so, I mean, obviously, I can see him folding there because of that same scenario. But interesting that Mike kind of saw it my way there. But it doesn't really matter at that point, right?
So, right, you know, right. Yeah, I just don't...
he's beat regardless, so...
Yep, yeah. I don't see anyone... I just couldn't for my life of me see any reason to call a raise on that river like that. There's no hand that I beat now. Even if you flopped the boat, like you said, you got counterfeited. So if you had 8-8 or 9-9, it's weird that he said the queen, because that's all I could think of too. It really feels like 8-8 or 9-9 or jack-jack or 10-10 would have done more than just calling. But again, that person would have been afraid of the third queen at that point. So they didn't have the boat if they were playing it the way the villain thought, you know, until the queen came. And then, you know, because he was hoping that you had a pair that was bigger than a six so that you could just, you know, think, oh, this guy must have A6, and that's why he's betting, because he thinks his two pair with an ace is good. And then he was hoping you had 8-9 or 10 or a pair of jacks. But once that queen comes and you raise, there's just no chance that you have anything worse than that, at least in my mind. But, well, Mike, thanks for sending in the pair of hands. We always love when people send us stuff to use on the show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti-Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.